Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
ESNY.
It's all on you now, man. It's all on you. I've always found, and I'm going to be telling this story for the last time today, that when you just press record, and it sucks that Zoom kind of alerts you now as to whether or not you're being recorded or not, but we just press record as soon as we start, and then we, you know, talk, and then if we have to edit something down, we'll edit something down, or I'll do it. But one time we had Keith McPherson on, and we were talking for like 15 minutes and he didn't know we were recording. So at the end of this 15 minute conversation we had, it's like, yeah, so I don't know if you guys want to figure out a way to like work all this into the podcast in the middle somewhere. Like, buddy, like we've been going 15 minutes strong. Like this is all live. And it was great. It was great content. So yeah, that's my biggest advice. Just hit record as soon as you start and just see what happens. Yeah, but this is, I'm gonna have to double check the episode now. I've looked at it a bunch of different times. This is episode 129 of the Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast. Yes, 129, presented by Elite Sports New York, Crossing Broad, Warwick Gaming, XL Media, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. A little bit different today. I am officially passing the torch. Allison is as well. No. Allison couldn't be here today, but we are officially passing the torch of the Bleacher Creatures franchise.
It's a franchise now. All right, multiple locations. I like
it. But yeah, just the one location, but franchise, it just sounds so good, man. It just sounds so nice and clean. It feels like we really built something, even though it was just one podcast. Yeah. But yeah, we're passing on the podcast. Allison and I are officially out of the game. Allison has her own life going on, and she's got work stuff and coaching stuff that she has to do. And I am on to another job. I'm starting a job with WMBF in Binghamton starting on June 1st. June 1st sounds right. I'm sure it's okay to say. Yeah, it hasn't been officially announced yet, but I'm sure it's okay to say at this point. So I'm moving to Binghamton in a week, not allowed to do the podcast anymore because of a pretty strict non-compete. So we got my boy, Josh, you know, he's been on the podcast a few times here and there. He's going to be taking it over, and he's got his buddy, Alec. And I mean, I could not possibly be more excited for you guys to take it over.
Alec, say hello.
Hello, everyone. Very excited. Haven't done this in a while, but I'm very excited.
Alec, you've got a pretty unique background yourself. Why don't you give us a quick rundown of what you're bringing to the pod?
Currently I am a hitting instructor in Pennsylvania. So I do a lot of deep diving into analytics and I love talking about the mechanical and also the mental approach when it comes to hitting, and all that kind of stemmed from my experience as a college player. So Josh knows, him and I have written together before in the past, and we actually hosted our own podcast for a while.
Can't say the name of the place, unfortunately.
Don't worry I won't. But yeah, so
what is the secret drama that you can't say the name of the place?
Pretty much there was like we were working at this one other blog site. There was a purchase, and then the general sporting division very slowly and unceremoniously kind of got phased out to the point where they're kind of in Voldemort territory. Who shall not be named.
Yeah. Left a lot of bitter feelings from.
Yeah.
Well, I have to imagine writers. For a media company, it's probably not a great business model to not be named.
Probably not. There was a whole slew of issues with them, but hey, we're here now. Clean slate, new project. It's going to be fun. Really excited for what Alec and I are going to be doing. And James, mind if we get started right away?
Yeah, let's go. I'm ready to go. It's been a month since we recorded the podcast with all this stuff that's been up in the air for me and Allison.
All right, so let's get right into it. The Yankees, they have the best record in baseball, just took 3 out of 4 from the Baltimore Orioles, winning the games that they absolutely need to win, which we didn't see a lot of last year. Comfortable 5-game lead on the Tampa Bay Rays with a weekend series of the Chicago Cubs. The White Sox coming up. The Cubs come next month. But you can't help. This could have been a 4-game sweep if Aaron Hicks just kind of had his shit together at the plate. Alec, you have lots of opinions about this. You've been chomping at the bit to just go off on Aaron Hicks. So you have the floor.
I just don't think I've ever seen a major league hitter have less of a plan at the plate. Like, it is – it blows my mind every time when I watch him hit. He just looks like he's completely out of control. Completely out of control of the swing. I don't know what his game plan is. It looks like – and I was watching some of the broadcasts today, and I think Michael Kay touched upon it during the broadcast. But, like, you know, if you hear when hitters say they're in between pitches, they're late on the fastball, they're early on the off-speed pitch, and – imagine that with Aaron Hicks, but like make it worse 10 times because the dude just is lost up there. It's non-competitive at bat after non-competitive at bat. And I want to say this is surprising and that there is a Aaron Hicks in the past that we could look at and be like, oh, this is where if he can get to that level, we're happy and we're fine. But like, I don't really know what that past is. It like, he has a few good looks here and there, but just I think he's on borrowed time. And I kind of said this earlier, I think privately, but I've never seen a guy with as long of a runway as him and how he still manages to crash the plane every single time.
James, got anything to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's fair to say that Aaron Hicks has been pretty bad this year. And obviously the pitch recognition
quick interjection real fast. Cause like, I don't know if you could say that he's not working competitive at bats. The results aren't there, but he's still in like, I think the 95th percentile when it comes to walk rate. And oddly enough, he's not chasing bad pitches, but the results aren't there. James.
Yeah. So as I was saying before, I was rudely interrupted by the person taking over the podcast for me. He thinks it's his show now. Not today. Still my show today. Still my show today, sir. Aaron Hicks he's still doing a really good job walking. He still has really good pitch recognition. I think the thing that's been missing from his game this year, which I partially want to attribute to the UCL injury that he suffered, is the power. The power hasn't been there. And part of that is that he's also not making contact with the ball, but he was never really a high contact guy anyway. He was always very much a Joey Gallo light in a way that, you know, he was going to make a little more contact than Gallo did, but not have quite as much power. And that was always who Aaron Hicks was as a hitter. He was really up there to walk. And it's clear that this year he is up there to walk. He is not trying to do any damage whatsoever. He's just trying to get on base. And, you know, it gets played up even more because of his numbers with runners in scoring position when people are really actually paying attention to Aaron Hicks. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, we're really paying attention. And this guy's not doing anything. And not that he's really doing much of anything besides that. The OPS is under 600. That's not ideal. That's a bad number to look at. And a lot of that is because there's no power in his game. And yeah, I wonder how much of that has to do with the injury he suffered because it affected him in the outfield too. His arm strength isn't there. His arm strength isn't what it was when, you know, you look back at his days with the Minnesota Twins and he was unfurling that 105 mile per hour throw against the Yankees from left field. You're just not going to see that with Aaron Hicks anymore. Still a good defender, but just the arm's not there anymore.
I'm going to push back just a little bit on that with the power because I have my trusty baseball savant page pulled up and I'm looking at his metrics. And I think that part of the issue is that he thinks that he's got some of that power in there or that kind of idea, like you were saying, where he's a Joey Gallo light, where he's going to be able to drive the ball either out of the ballpark or into the gaps, but he doesn't hit the ball hard. And I'm not just talking.
That was Aaron Hicks of the past. Look back like 4 years ago. It was more like that for him, where he was trying to do damage and trying to lift the ball. This year, it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the power this year.
But his like exit velocity and his max exit velocity are actually on par with his career averages. So, you know, maybe I'm looking at it now that he has not touched an average exit velocity at 90 miles per hour or more. And he'll occasionally run into a max exit velo of 111, 110. But that those are kind of like the outliers. And if you the way MLB, the way they determine what a barrel ball is, it's anything that's 95 plus. In exit velocity, he doesn't hit a lot of those, even over the course of his career. So I'm not sure, like I'm sure the UCL injury definitely plays a part of it, but I think he needs to get away from that mindset of, hey, I can put out home runs when I need to, because A, the Yankees don't need him to. But, you know, just singles and on base, as you were saying. And then Josh, kind of backtracking to what you were saying, like about the non-competitive at-bats. Yeah, he has a high walk rate and he doesn't chase the ball a lot, but he's not hitting anything in the zone.
It's also important to note on that he is also having an awful, awful month, because we're quickly forgetting Aaron Hicks hit 306 in April. They weren't pretty results, but he was still kind of digging and dunking the ball at least a little bit. This month he's batting under 100. I think entering today's game, he was batting 091 in May. And we've seen Yankees have strong Aprils and terrible Mays. Didi Gregorius not too long ago comes directly to mind. But just to touch on what Alex said, this isn't just a bad month. This isn't like getting burned by BABIP like Didi Gregorius was, or Gary Sanchez even many moons ago. He is not making contact with the ball. He, like I say to Alec in like private chats all the time, Aaron Hicks is literally swinging from his ass. Like it's Max Greenfield, a great friend of the show, tweeted today that, I think it was Max who tweeted this, Aaron Hicks moves more than a pop singer's backup dancer.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's classic, yeah. Max.
Yeah, and you saw it today. He was just, like, his legs are all over the place. He's either trying to do too much at the plate, and on top of that, he just doesn't have a plan. He's going up hoping to make contact and hope for the best. It's not a good approach to have at all.
Mm-hmm. And I want to circle back to the power one more time, because we're also, we're kind of circling the same point.
Yeah.
You know, what we didn't consider is the juiced ball effect with Aaron Hicks. Even with those underlying numbers where the launch angle and the max exit and the average exit velo is generally the same, you look at the slugging numbers from 3 years ago and they're significantly higher. So part of that might be, you know, just the juiced ball merchant, and part of it might be that he's striking out more and making worse contact this year. And, you know, still, what has it been, 6 weeks? It's not a huge sample size yet. It's pretty significant at this point.
It's not a huge sample size, but Hicks has underperformed this $70 million contract enough where it's officially becoming a problem.
You say $70 million, but it's $10 million a year. What is $10 million a year? That's nothing.
Yeah, okay. But in better news, happier news, the Yankees, they're still rolling, and I think we could say Matt Blake is a pitching wizard.
Oh, I love him.
I love Matt Blake so much.
He is so good.
Yeah, and just looking at the matchups we have with the White Sox this coming weekend. Tomorrow it's Nestor and Keuchel. Then on Saturday, I believe, it's Severino and Kopech again. And then excuse me. And then on Tuesday, it will be Tyone, and I already forgot who's pitching for the White Sox. But all three of those guys have been having very, very good seasons. Severino, he's kind of like, he's regressed a little bit, because when he doesn't have that good third pitch going, he kind of doesn't really know what to do. But on the whole, I think this is another very winnable series for the Yankees. Guys, are you in the same boat?
Yeah, I agree, for sure. I mean, they've done it once before, and I know the White Sox are getting a little bit healthier, but I mean, they're on such a roll, and pitching has, like you said, it's just been outstanding. Like, I'm not worried about Severino at all. I thought he's been more impressive than I could have hoped coming off the Tommy John surgery.
I certainly was not expecting this good a level of Severino at all. Johnny Cueto pitching on Sunday against Tyone, that's gonna be a fun watch.
Jameson Taillon has been so good this year too. And I really just attribute it to him. You know, he changed his arm action coming back from those injuries where he didn't pitch for 2 years, went with a shorter arm action. I'm sure that had some kind of effect on him last year, where maybe he wasn't, you know, the consistency wasn't there for him last year. I think we saw plenty of dominant outings from Tyone, and we also saw a lot of outings where he'd get tagged for five and two innings. There's just not a lot of start-to-start consistency. I think we're seeing that a lot more this year. I think the sweeper has looked fantastic.
The sweeper, and also with Tyone, maybe we need to rethink what we've been saying about the sinker all these years, because he goes back to throwing his sinker and all of a sudden he's a different pitcher.
Well, it's all cyclical, right? You adjust to the high fastball and all of a sudden the sinker is more effective again. You adjust to the sinker, all of a sudden the high fastball is more effective again. It's all cyclical. It all comes back and forth.
Yeah, because I'm looking at some of the matchups specifically with the White Sox coming up, because Dallas Keuchel, he does well against the Yankees. Yeah, against New York, 10 starts, 2.06 ERA, 4-4. But at Yankee Stadium, here's where the narrative changes. At Yankee Stadium, okay, 2.43 ERA, 6-6. But Dallas Keuchel has shown. But
we're including way too many of his good years in that, though. And he hasn't been good for 3 years. He just hasn't been good. And of course,
I was just.
We've seen him already this year, and of course, since it was Jordan Montgomery pitching for us, we didn't score any runs off him, but that was unbelievably unacceptable to get almost shut out by Dallas Keuchel over, five, six innings?
How about today we actually score for Jordan Montgomery and then Miguel Castro suddenly forgets how to pitch?
Well, you know that was going to happen. The moment they took the 2-0 lead in the first, it's just like, oh, this is going to be the game, though, where Montgomery's going to, you know, not be at his best self, but he'll definitely be serviceable.
Jordan Montgomery is allergic to wins.
Good thing wins are a meaningless stat.
Yeah, no, factual. Yeah, they're meaningless, but it's still nice to see one in the win column where you're not going to get into that 2018 Jacob deGrom territory where at the end of the year you got people saying, what do you mean? He only had 9 wins this year. How could you vote for him for Cy Young? That fucking Mad Dog Russo-esque takes.
Alec, you got some opinions on Mad Dog?
I haven't watched any of his crap in the last 3 years, but the dude just likes to hear
this. He wanted Brandon Crawford to be MVP last year because he's the best player on the best team. First of all, Buster Posey was the best player on the Giants last year. That's a fact. Second of all, who cares? Yeah. Baseball is the one sport where it does not matter if your team sucks or not. Because guess what? Mike Trout only gets 4 at-bats a game. Yeah. He can't will the Angels to a victory on his own. He could hit a home run in every at-bat in that game. They might lose 5-4.
Mike Trout is we're getting it off on a baseball tangent here like we're wont to do, but Mike Trout is a prime example of how flawed a stat war actually is, because the guy's having an 8-10 war season on a non-playoff Angels team for how many years? Put him on a playoff team where he actually has support in the lineup. It's a more balanced team. It's put him on a 98 Yankees quality team, and that war might bump even a little higher. Just because that human element of having a little extra bounce in your step playing on a good team.
No, I agree. But then again, kind of going on a tangent.
Is the famous Alex
this is a big tangent podcast. Allison and I have talked about Danny Phantom for straight up 20 minutes on this podcast before. So anytime you guys want to go on a tangent, this is what this space is for.
I got to ask, are we getting the infamous Alec Montecalvo Mike Trout rant right now?
No, I'm going to curtail it a bit.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Well, just I don't think he's the best player ever. So, but that we could save that conversation for another
time. That's all best player ever. That's a very different conversation.
I hear it a lot and I have some strong opinions on that.
Yeah. But he's halfway through his career. How could you make that judgment yet? It's impossible.
That's my opinion exactly.
Well, you also live kind of in his hometown's backyard. So, of course, you're going to get a lot of Mike Trout stands.
Yeah, for sure. Also, idiotic of him to sign that contract and stay in LA for 14 years and not be a hero coming back to Philly, but hey, that's another thing. But with war, I like war as measuring how valuable a player is to their team, but I think we are getting just too far into it's the end all be all, you know?
Right.
You look at everyone's always talking about, or at least they're talking about right now, how Mike Trout, if the season were to end today, he would be the American League MVP. It's why wouldn't it be someone like Aaron Judge or someone who can put up as much of offensive numbers as Trout, but just doesn't walk as much, doesn't get on base as much, you know? Trout is a very talented ball player, and I'm not robbing him from any of his MVPs. But I feel feel like WAR is kind of like geared towards a player like him specifically. And then you look back in retrospect at guys who you're like, oh yeah, they would have like much higher WARs, right? And then either they don't. And it's like, well, why? They do everything almost as good as Trout. Like, and but that difference is a slim margin. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Baseball is a game of inches.
Yeah. That's true. Anyway, back to the Yankees, because as much as we'd love to talk about Mike Trout on here, this is a Yankees podcast. On the whole, we also got to talk about how the hard stretch of the schedule is coming up, because Mike Trout's Angels, if I'm not mistaken, they're up very, very soon.
They're good.
Yeah, first
we have them. We have them, and then Tampa Bay right after them. In a couple weeks.
Yeah, but I think we've also got Tampa Bay after, because we got the White Sox, then the Orioles. Yeah, then Tampa Bay comes up, and at the Trop, no less.
Oh yeah, I had it backwards. Tampa Bay, then the Angels.
Yeah, so right now we're about to see what these Yankees are actually made of. We've got the three against the White Sox, three against the Orioles, four at the Trop against the Rays. Then the Angels come, and then it's pretty balanced the rest of the way. But the next couple of weeks are going to be key, guys. How are we feeling heading into this stretch of games, particularly going up against the Rays in hated Tropicana Field?
I'm very confident. There's no reason to not be confident, right?
I mean, Rays have been running kind of hot lately, though.
They have, but you know, noted Yankee killers Austin Meadows and who all the other guys are gone. Tyler Glass not pitching. G-Man Choi. I mean, like the Rays are good and they're gonna always be good, but they don't strike the same kind of fear that they have in the past couple of years.
Yeah, they very much are a different team on paper this year, especially in terms of pitching. I swear, I think that there's some sort of equal time thing going on with baseball reporting on TV, because they'll mention Shane McClanahan just to give the Rays some airtime.
Yeah.
To the point where it's kind of becoming offensive.
I mean, what? Like, this is the best team in the American League over the last couple of years. And, you know, it's like that luster has kind of been lost, because, you know, I also have very strong opinions about the Rays, having grown up, you know, 2 hours from their stadium. But
2 hours? I thought we were much closer.
Not an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on traffic.
You know what? Going to the Trop, there's always traffic because it's, oh God, what a terrible location.
But yeah.
Trop needs to be burned to the ground.
The crazy part is apparently guys on the beat love the Trop. Like Brian Hoke and Mark Feinson.
They have such a nice press box and just such a dog shit field.
Well, according to Feinsand and Hoke, the Trop is one of the few ballparks where, for all the other issues with the ballpark, the Wi-Fi is apparently very reliable.
That's because they don't have any fans in there using it all at once.
Yeah, there's broadband-wise, and all the fans there are like 80 years old. They don't have smartphones. They're rolling with like Motorola Razors. They got Nokias out there. You think those things are connecting to Wi-Fi? Doubt it. No Doubt way. It.
I mean, it's Florida, so probably everybody has a Razor. It's Tampa or the surrounding area. There's more than enough people there on meth, probably, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Even so, even the ones with the iPhone, you're going to tell an 80-year-old grandma, like, hey, grandma, you know you can connect to the stadium's Wi-Fi, right? What do you mean? I'm already connected to the internet.
She accidentally connects to the Jumbotron. Texts are twice as large as it needs to be.
My mother-in-law was just here, and our toddler was playing with her phone, and the phone isn't locked because she doesn't like bother to learn how to lock the phone. Like, baby goes down for the night, all my settings are messed up. What are all these pictures, these like baby selfies that I'm seeing? Well, you didn't unlock your phone, that's why.
Rookie mistake.
But on the whole, like, the Yankees, I'm feeling really good about this team in the next stretch of games. I think that it's going to be more of a mark on the pitching to see how much those arms can be tested, particularly Jordan Montgomery and Jameson Taillon and Nestor Cortez, who's doing all these great things despite his fastball velocity being in the fourth percentile.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the Yankees down the stretch, you got a nice easy week right now where the White Sox really aren't at full strength yet, and you can take advantage of that. And then you got the Orioles again. And I think when you're looking at that last week at four games at the Trop. I think if you split those, you're fine. I don't care if you split those, don't lose the series, but you know, split them or win it. And then you take two or three from home at the Angels. I don't think anybody's going to have any complaints about that.
No, absolutely not.
I think that over the that especially last year, given how, because I remember early in the year they looked real bad at the Trop, and then over the rest of the season they looked gradually better across the board. I have to think that, because going into last season, I think over a 5-year stretch, the Yankees were playing sub 500 ball just at Tropicana Field in particular. So I got to think that Aaron Boone and all the players and coaches just had to sit down, just vented everything that they fucking hate about that ballpark, and then just figured out, okay, we've gotten it all out. The Trop is a terrible place, but we have to play here. Okay, here's what sucks about the place. How do we try and play better just so we're not like having this sense of malaise every time we take the field?
Yeah. I'll say, I don't want to see Joey Gallo in left field a single time at the Trop because he's already like, he's making plays in left fields generally, but it looks like he's really uncomfortable making those plays. And you know, when the ball gets up against the white roof of the Trop, it gets harder to see. Like, I don't need to see Joey Gallo, who's like struggling with the lights in Yankee Stadium, trying to track a fly ball, then go to the Trop and try to track a white ball against a white roof. Cause whoever came up with that idea was just a menace. Whoever came up with the whole Trop is just a menace to society. But I don't need to see that.
It was supposed to be a hockey arena. Didn't the Lightning
play there for a few years?
They did. But yeah, I think that was the main purpose. And
it's also a convention center sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
And it was allegedly designed so that no ball would ever hit the catwalk. Allegedly.
Yeah. So, well, that said, okay, you say you don't want Joey Gallo playing left field. Who do you put in left field?
I wouldn't hate putting Hicks in left field and having Judge play center and Stanton in right field. I mean, you're going to have to play Joey Gallo in the outfield. You're going to have to. I don't want to see it. I don't want to watch it unfold because it's going to make me really nervous watching him track fly balls in left field.
It's like, what do you want to risk more? Joey Gallo's defense in left field or Giancarlo Stanton's legs on turf?
Yeah, I think the turf thing's overrated. That's how much of a difference does it really make playing on turf consistently?
If you look at the Rogers Center, they definitely kind of redid the whole. They kind of redesigned their whole turf.
Yeah, maybe the turf in Tampa Bay is just worse. Maybe they just have worse turf than Toronto.
You're gonna say that?
But you got guys out there playing every day. They're not getting hurt. The outfielders aren't getting hurt more often than other guys playing their 81 games a year. Like. Yeah. I'm not overly concerned about Giancarlo Stanton playing 18 innings of right field at the Trop.
I just remembered another Yankee killer for the Rays, Brandon Lau. I just remembered he's on the IL with the back thing.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, that happened a couple days ago.
Yeah, well, then it sounds like it's a good opportunity for the Yankees to go in there and kind of solidify their grip at the top.
Yeah, hopefully, or else like Kevin Cash is going to do his like three different fucking bullpen games thing.
Is he still doing that?
It's the Rays. Of course they're still doing that. We'll probably get Shane McClanahan, Corey Kluber, and then two bullpen games.
Yeah. It works for them. It just doesn't work in the postseason because you get to the end of the year and it's like, wow, like our relievers have all thrown like 130 innings. They don't usually do that. That's how you get Nick Anderson, the best reliever of the year in 2020. Even in 2020, shortened season, 2020, you get to the end of the year and Nick Anderson is just gassed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just have an issue with the Rays just because they're clearly doing it so they don't have to pay pitchers and they're crying poverty, yet they're also playing like we're the most woke franchise in the game card. Like anytime there's a tragedy, the Rays are the first they're the first team to comment, and they always have the most beautiful statement out of all the teams. It's infuriating.
What infuriates me is like the fandom. Because
what fandom?
Well, no, but that's like the social media presence of quote unquote the fandom. You know, they're always yelling at Yankee, like in the faces of Yankee fans about like how great they are, how the Yankees suck and all this shit. And it's like, you know, I grew up there my entire life. None of y'all existed.
No.
None of y'all. It's like, and you guys don't even attend your own games. Like,
actually, I did a whole story about that, about the attendance and the lack of like generational stars. Cause I mean, who's the generational star, right? It's Evan Longoria. He only played there for 8 years, nine years,
yeah, about that,
half a career. And that's the one guy you can point to and be like, yes, this was the Derek Jeter cornerstone, David Wright cornerstone of the organization. Even when the Rays are a first place team, they're still in the bottom half in attendance. It's just, it's horrible. The ballpark is stupid. It's far away from major city center. It's the team is always usually bad, and even when they're good, there's not recognizable names that people want to go out and watch. So how do you get fans?
I don't know. Well, you know, when they were in the World Series a couple of years ago, they made it known that they were out there. I was like, where did you guys come from?
When they were in the World Series for like that 1 week. We're out here. We've been out here.
It's like the Los Angeles Kings fans who all of a sudden appeared in the 2014 Cup Finals against the Rangers.
We've been here.
We don't need to. Don't remind me of that, please.
Still stinging from last night, huh, man?
Yep. That one hurt.
Yep. Anyway, what else should we talk about? James, you got any K-Rod rants? Or have you not? You haven't been watching.
I haven't watched a single inning of K-Rod since the first broadcast. And I won't for the rest of the year. Because for somebody who had 12 career bunts, Alex Rodriguez never shuts up about how important bunting is. Says anybody who's a good player on a team is automatically a great defender and a great ambassador for the game. Says it just like that every single time. I hate it. I hate Alex Rodriguez. I used to like him too. And even after the steroid thing, I was like, all right, like I've come back around on A-Rod. Like I'm back in on A-Rod. And then he just goes on national television every week and lies. I know he knows he's lying. I know that he knows with 700 career home runs that bunting is not important. I know he knows that, but it's just like ESPN said, we need old people to watch. So go talk about bunting.
Well, you know what it was like when he first became a TV analyst, he was very good at it. Like his knowledge of the situation of what pitches were coming, like watching it in real time was very impressive. I loved listening to him, but then he realized he was good at it.
And now he's just like, I'm Alex Rodriguez. Yeah, I know everything.
And now it's insufferable. It's like,
Or as far as like, he's changed his mind on everything. He's like, I'm Alex Rodriguez. I know everything. I know more than I did last year. So what are you talking about, dude? Go back to like right when you retired, when you knew how important hitting home runs were and you knew how important it was to walk and you knew that contact hitting really wasn't all that important in an offense for a long sustainable season. That's not having a contact oriented team. The 2015 Kansas City Royals were fun, but that team probably doesn't win the World Series any other given year. They got real lucky that year. It's just not the right way to build a team. And Xander Bogaerts is bad at defense. I'm sorry. He is. He's really bad at defense. Just because he's the shortstop for the Boston Red Sox doesn't make him a good defender.
Anyway, back to Yankees talk, because I realized we're going to be back at this, Alec and I, in a week. The Yankees have a pretty significant week coming up. All right, over the next 7 days, which Yankee, besides Aaron Hicks, needs to have a good week? Alec, we'll start with you.
I'm only stuck with one, or can I point out a couple?
You can point out a couple, sure.
I would love to see LeMahieu start swinging it again, like, because I was surprised to find his average had dropped to like 260.
He's also having a bad month.
Yeah, just because how important he is at the top of the lineup when he is playing, especially against the better teams coming up, I would love to see him kind of try to bring that average back up. You know, maybe it would be great to see him closer to 300 again, but even if it's 280, 290, that would be fantastic. But kind of in a similar vein, I want to see Isaiah Kiner-Falefa continue to – like, I know he kind of fell into a little bit of a funk, but then he's starting to swing his way out of it. And just, I mean, he walked in the ninth inning today and then stole second? Yeah, he
did. Walked and stole second.
So, like, you know, that kind of impact on the offensive side of the game, I would love to see him continue to make, but then also clean up on the defensive side. Those are two guys in the lineup. I would love to see, you know, kind of keep trending in the right direction. And then just in the bullpen, like Loaiza. We need him.
We really do.
Especially since Green is probably out with an injury. I don't trust Lickie. I mean, like, Josh and I have a friend who is very sour on Elizaga, but I mean, it, other than the control, his stuff still is there. It's just, you know, maybe a bit of a confidence issue. But I'm like, if there was a time for him to realize he still has it, it'd be this upcoming week.
Yeah, especially because you can't look at Aroldis Chapman's first month and a half of the season and expect to see that kind of success in the rest of the season.
No,
because absolutely. all of the advanced numbers say, like, there is nobody in baseball getting quite as lucky as Aroldis Chapman right now.
Yeah.
To have not given up an earned run for, what was it, like 5 weeks?
Yeah.
That was pure luck. I think his expected ERA, the day that he gave up his first run, his expected ERA was like 4.1, which is not great. That's not great.
Low even for him.
Yeah. And exactly. And it's just, so Jonathan Loaisiga, just, I want him to be the closer of the future, man. I know right now it's going to be Clay Holmes, and I think Clay Holmes can really take over that role when Aroldis Chapman falls off the rails. But I want it to be Loaisiga.
I think they're already getting ready for, at some point, probably in the next, we'll say, 4 to 6 weeks, that Chapman is going to lose the closer spot entirely, and they're going to tell Holmes, hey, it's your job now. And I'm okay with that.
It's going to have to come at the back end of poor results for Aroldis Chapman. Even if, you know, he's getting people out and getting saves, even with like a 4.10 ERA, expected ERA, like, they're not going to say, all right, well, we're giving the closer job to Clay Holmes because he's getting people out more efficiently. I don't think the Yankees would do that.
Yeah, but even Boone, or, and I think Blake also said how, I think this was yesterday, how they realized they got burned last year just relying on Chapman too much.
Yeah.
I think right now they're just kind of alternating between.
Also, I don't think Chapman's good in any other role than the closer role. I think he's just been the closer for so long that he's just, if you put him in the eighth inning, he's just not going to bring the same stuff. I think we've seen that before when he lost the closer role. What was that, 2019? That they took him out of the closer role at the end of the year. He didn't look as good in the seventh. He didn't look as good in the eighth. He didn't look as focused. Like when you ask him to come in and get a non-save situation, get three outs with four runs on the board, like he just never looks as locked in.
He doesn't look locked in right now, even in the situation.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying he should be the closer.
He's
just not going to be good anywhere. I think he's done.
For him, like, you know, I want to hope that Aaron Boone has kind of gotten to the whole, okay, like, no funny business. That's like, go out there and stomp on our opponents. And I would hope that he would just be like, hey, like, I don't care about your feelings, Chapman. Like,
been shy about that this year. If Aroldis Chapman walks the first two guys, someone's warming up in the bullpen. We're ready to go.
Did Holmes go six outs yesterday?
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. Like that, I love. It's like, you know, he had a low impact eighth inning. Of course, go with him in the ninth. And
yeah,
I feel like we hadn't seen that kind of decision making by Boone in the past.
No,
I forget who said it recently, because Harold Reynolds actually made a smart remark on MLB Network. He said, "This is Boone unleashed." Like, the first 3 years we're about to see if he could do the job, they brought him back, and now they're just letting him do his thing.
I think it's the exact opposite. I think it's more, the analytics are going to dictate a little bit more of what we do, and we're going to need you to trust us that the analytics know. Because Aaron Boone is a baseball lifer. You think he's out there saying, like, oh, I'm going to let Clay Holmes go get six outs when I have my set closer in his position and he's ready to go and it's a save situation?
Chapman wasn't pitching yesterday regardless, because that would have been three days in a row.
He's not going to let Chapman run in those ninth innings where you walk the first two guys. He's coming to get you. He is. He's not going to see, well, he's our closer, let's let him work out of it. It's no, two guys get on base, somebody's warm. That's what the analytics say, especially with Chapman.
Didn't he also play tough love with Torres in the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
Like not only just benching him on opening day, I thought I remember there were a few lines.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Aaron Boone's doing a great job. I think he's doing a great job managing all of the people and all of the personalities. I think, especially with the bullpen, the decision-making process has been a lot more analytically based than you could say for the last couple of years, where, you know, our guy Max Greenfield, and I'm sure you guys are going to have Max on a ton on the podcast, because he's the podcast's official stats genius.
Yeah.
But even he was like, yeah, like it's clear that they're just going with the analytics this year. They're not messing around with Boone's gut. And that's something that they've been doing over the past few years where there was a heavy analytic influence. But if Boone thought, yeah, I feel more comfortable with so-and-so in this situation than so-and-so, even if the analytics say otherwise, like this year, they're going with the numbers.
I don't know. Like I forget who it was. They said, look, Boone came back on a 3-year deal. So that means that this time, like it's something about Boone having leverage. Which, yeah, he kind of does, but at the same time, this team is just different than all those stat heavy teams.
He's a good manager. He just is. Yeah. He's a good manager.
Well, yeah,
always was.
And I think there has been a pretty like concentrated focus on, you know, cleaning up the stuff that was hurting them in the previous years, that sloppy base.
And it wasn't really hurting them all that much in the long run. The big problems were that, especially last year, nobody was hitting at all.
Yeah.
That's not on Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone can't make you go up there and get a hit. But of course Aaron Boone got blamed for that, but those sloppy things aren't happening this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was on a Yankee broadcast a few weeks ago, but like someone said, like they've improved on the margins so much more in the past,
especially
like defensively, base running, all that stuff. And it's just like, I was one of the naysayers at the beginning of the year when the results of those kind of margins didn't quite add up yet. And I was like, oh, this looks like the same exact team as these previous years. Like it's slow and boring. And I'm not interested. But then, you know, thankfully I'm eating crow on that now. It's like, I sat there for the longest time trying to figure out, okay, what is that difference between this year and last year and the years before? It's like, oh, like that, like, there it is. They've cleaned up the margins and they're playing just smart, like succinct baseball. And
consistent baseball.
Like, yeah, exactly. And so, I'm like, I all credit to Boone because I guess, Josh, if you remember, we've been pretty critical of some of his decisions last year, I think.
We were critical of some of the bullpen decisions last year because if there's one thing that we absolutely can knock Aaron Boone for, with Chapman right now being the exception, it's that he does have a knack for sometimes leaving guys in a little too long.
Mm.
Cause like, okay, sometimes you want to do the Luis Severino thing and just kind of will a second pitch to start working, which it's not going to do.
Yeah.
You will something to happen all you want. It's not going to happen. But now it's clear that Aaron Boone, he's got the right people in his ear. I think that adding Luis Rojas was a phenomenal addition because it sounds like the two got along from the get-go.
Yeah.
And also, like, just in terms of the team, Alec, you mentioned early on how early on with the margins, it was looking like more of the same. One thing that I noticed, and I think, James, you noticed this as well, is that over the first 2 weeks of the season, yeah, the results were kind of similar, low scoring, the ball wasn't being hit that hard, but across the entire roster, everyone is taking a much cleaner swing. They're seeing the ball better. They have a better understanding of the zone. They're not going up there and just hoping to launch the ball to Mars or to the moon or wherever and hope for the best. Right now, it's like they've rediscovered situational hitting.
Well, that was a conscious approach, not the situational hitting plays into it, but not, you know, Marcus Thames's approach was wait on a pitch, get your pitch and launch it into the seats. This year, they have been a lot more aggressive in chasing pitches that maybe aren't perfectly cut pitches. And I think part of Joey Gallo's struggles, honestly, are that this approach is just something that doesn't work for him. It's just not his game, where he maybe should be going back to that old approach where he's just waiting for a specific pitch.
I was surprised to learn that Brendan Cuddy wrote an article about this. Apparently this has been Gallo's thing since he was 10.
Yeah. It's just always been, and he has been swinging more this year and making worse contact. So yeah. That's not great. That's not what you want. I think for Joey Gallo, I think that approach doesn't work. Maybe Marcus Thames' approach was better for him. So if he wants to go back to that personally, I'm not going to say no.
Well, apparently Padres really, really like him. So
who, Joey? Oh, Marcus Thames?
No, Joey Gallo.
Joey Gallo. Oh, yeah. Well, everyone should like Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo, when the shift gets banned next year, I'm really curious to see what that looks like for him. For someone who really doesn't hit a lot of ground balls, but does get shifted on 96% of the time. Like, how will that affect his average? I'm really curious.
We'll see. Maybe he'll stop overcompensating a little bit. But anyway, yeah, I think that's a pretty good stopping point for us. We covered everything we needed to, from the upcoming games to Chapman to a bunch of other stuff. Mike Trout tangent somewhere in the middle.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, folks, starting next week, it's going to be me and Alec Montecalvo here on Bleacher Creatures. James, thanks so much for passing the torch on to us.
Torch officially passed. I don't have to do any work anymore.
Thank you, James.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, you could find me on Twitter at Josh B E S N Y. You can find this podcast on Apple, Spotify. I'm going to assume we're also on Google Play and Stitcher as well.
Yeah, probably.
Alec, give them your socials.
Well, I'm not even on Twitter anymore.
That's a good decision. That's a good just mental health decision.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was definitely the whole, like, this is a cesspool, so I'm off. but yeah, no, I'm not on social media, like, other than Instagram, but don't follow me on Instagram. I got nothing fun to post.
All right.
Yeah, I post on Instagram once a year on my brother's birthday. I post a bunch of embarrassing pictures of him. And if you just go down my Instagram feed right now for the last 5 years, I think there's one post that's different than the other ones.
You guys start posting the dogs.
No, I don't want people seeing my life. You know, they can read about it in tweets. That's fine, but I don't want them seeing it.
Suddenly it makes sense. Like, that you got this whole like panel set up behind you. With like the wood wall, the random dry erase board. It's kind of like this whole
Alex. Yeah, my little log cabin down here. That the dry erase board I used to actually use for calendar stuff, and then I realized that I was never actually looking at it when I would I'd write an assignment up on there and be like, all right, like it's right behind me. I'm gonna be able to see it. Like when I get up, I'll turn around and be like, right, I have to do that assignment. Never looked at it. So then I just started writing. You remember Pardon the Interruption?
Oh, yeah.
Not Part of the Interruption. What was the show that came on before that?
Around the Horn.
Yeah. So I just started writing. What was the guy's name who had
Woody
the signs?
Page. Woody,
Woody Page. Page. Yeah. I just started writing Woody Pageisms up there.
Nice.
Didn't write any today because, once again, forgot that existed until this very moment.
All right. Now we. Wow. James, maybe you do need to move to Binghamton. The walls are closing in on you down there, man.
Yeah. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get out of the log cabin.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much again for coming on the show. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Kirk, guys, thanks for coming on the show. This is my show.
Not anymore. Not anymore, it ain't. It's mine and Alex now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya.